My name is Jessica, and I'm a recovering alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 2nd, 2017, and for that, I'm extremely grateful. Tonight, I'm going to share with y'all my story. What it was like, what happened when I said yes to a life in recovery, and what my days look like today. So, I am a daughter to Adela and Gilbert Segura, and I'm the second oldest of four children. I was raised with a Catholic upbringing that I cherish to this day. Now, certainly at times in my childhood and teen years, I questioned God, rejected him, and the religion as a whole. But today, it plays a crucial part in my everyday life. So when I was little, there were certain circumstances that I could look back on that formed a lack of belonging, this ugly duckling, outcast, black sheep syndrome. At no fault to my parents, God bless them and their 43 years of marriage, I was raised in a healthy family environment. I didn't suffer any form of abuse or really experience anything too traumatic, but there are moments in my life that I felt made me feel a certain kind of way. So for instance, all my siblings were registered to play soccer when we were growing up, but for whatever reason, I didn't. And I don't know why that made me feel less than. I also wanted to be a Girl Scout, and I never was. So can you imagine the jealousy that brewed within me when my baby sister got to? Little did I know that these were one of my first resentments in life. Little Jessica's ego was slowly starting to grow. And growing up with my girlfriends, I missed out on certain sleepovers and Girl Scout trips. So in turn, I was left out of some inside jokes. I will never forget a day when my bestie, so I thought, told me that I wasn't her best friend and that Francis was her best friend. And even though me and her stayed friends through high school, it's crazy to think that moments like these stuck out in my mind versus any other happy moment that I experienced. As I grew up, the social acceptance of drinking was prominent in my family. Okay, so like the adults got the real margaritas, and then the kids got their round of virgin margaritas with the salted rims. And oh, did we feel so special. You know, it was normal, and it was something that I knew I would get to look forward to drinking, that adult beverage that was missing the tequila, that one day would be mine. But then I vaguely remember trying a Budweiser or some sort of domestic beer and being like, what the, is this disgusting? Y'all drink this crap? And little Jessica continued to live her carefree life with her family. As I grew up from middle school to high school, I slowly observed my older cousins and my brother indulge. They made partying look like so much fun. They would sneak out and I would cover for them. And in these moments, I finally felt some sort of importance. Now, my brother is 2 years older than me. And without going into too much of his life and journey, he truly was someone that I looked up to. He was my role model, my hero. And seeing him slowly use weed and sneak out of the house to drink, I started gaining such resentments towards drugs and alcohol until I opened Pandora's box. You see, because at the end of the day, I knew I'd be able to drink. It was a legal thing that you got to do at a certain age, right? But, you know, I wasn't there yet. So I asked my brother if he'd hook it up, get me a bottle for me and my friends. We just got our senior rings, right? So that lasted, about 5 minutes before my mom, you know, broke into my room, caught us red-handed with our first bottle of Bacardi rum. We cried our way out of it, and most of my friends got scared enough to fly right the rest of their senior year. I, on the other hand, it was just the beginning. I don't know what changed my marijuana hater mindset, but I went to my brother one day and was like, can you smoke me out? I want to see what this is like. Despite his hesitations, he does, and the floodgates open. By this time, I was a senior in high school, and I would slowly meet up with him and his friends, get stoned, sober up a bit, clear eyes, go home, was fine. You see, one thing I told myself is that if I could pull off this facade, ace my classes, continue to be the top 10% of the class, what's the harm? If I could be a productive stoner, there is no harm in this, right? For me, weed truly was a gateway drug. When I graduated from high school, I got into the CAP program. So I went to UTSA for a year, and then if I made the right GPA, I would transfer to UT Austin. All bets were off in college. I was an official stoner, drinking, partying, trying new drugs, while maintaining a pristine scholarly lifestyle. I almost didn't get into UT. I actually got a 2.96 GPA, and I had to get a 3.0, and I negotiated my way. My stubborn nature was not accepting it, got a grade change, got my 3.0, and on to Austin I went, to the party town college. So my parents made a deal with me that if I can make it through this first year away from San Antonio at UT without my car, that you get to take it up your third year. I was like, okay, seems fair. Well, my first visit home from UT, I drive it drunk and high. I total it by falling asleep at the wheel. I hit a tree stump, mind you, was feet away from a telephone pole. So you can only imagine what really would have happened if that tree stump wasn't there and I would have hit a telephone pole. I spiraled 360s in the street. I don't know how I didn't hit someone else. But that's when I came to, and I got out of the car. This stranger asked me if I had anything on me because the cops were about to show up. And I was like, yeah, a quarter of weed. And he was like, give me that. And I don't know what, I gave him my purse, my weed, and then the cops came and I cried my way out of it. I was a good kid. I was miles away from home and my parents were able to come get me. And the cop told them, if I recall correctly, she seems like a good kid. And I walked away barely without a physical scratch and no scratch on my record. You would think that this was the scare that I needed, but I continued to pass out and black out almost every weekend in college. I pieced together my nights. I had my friends take care of me. Not all nights was I so lucky, because I remember one night, I ended up passed out in a cab or on Dirty 6th Street in downtown Austin, and I got run via an ambulance to a local hospital to sober up. I even blacked out at my first official bar visit when I turned 21 after two drinks. Luckily, I was there with my brother, and he managed to get me home okay. But the blackouts made me realize this: I'm not normal. This is not normal. But we still didn't realize the progressiveness of this disease, and it didn't seem to be too much of a cause for concern. Sure, my family worried, but I was getting A's and B's at UT Austin. My self-sufficient, stubborn nature kept my parents and family at arm's length. So, come 2007, I graduated from UT on time and on the Dean's Honors List. Last thing Miss Independence was going to do was move back home. So after the hefty investment I made in my college education, I go and get a restaurant job off 36th in downtown Austin. The real fun can begin, right? My parents and I bought a car for my graduation, and at age 22, I got not one, but two arrests within 3 months apart. That first arrest, I should have gotten a DWI. I like hopped a curb in the middle of UT campus, but the lady seemed like, oh, she seems like a nice girl. I'm just going to give her a possession of marijuana misdemeanor. But that wasn't enough. 3 months later, I am like passed out and in my car, foot on the brake, right in front of the Texas Capitol. The light circles green and red and green and red. And the cop right there was like, something ain't right. So second arrest, here I come, and it's a real D-dub this time. So you think I would have woken up to this reality, then I'm not a normal drinker. But I paid my dues, which, might I add, were not that severe with both arrests, and the service industry continued to suck me in. That's when I found my third love-hate drug, cocaine. The all-nighters and painting the town red seemed normal. Losing my serotonin levels, feeling depressed after days on days of partying seemed normal. Drinking and drugging was normal. I paid my bills. I somewhat showed up to the family obligations, and I still felt I had a grasp on my independent life. After being late for the last time, I got fired from the service industry, but that led me to getting a real 8-to-5. All right, let's see if she shapes up. No, the weekend benders and turning up on a Tuesday still existed. Mind you, there were so many instances that I can count on more than two hands how my friends that were with me begged me not to drink and drive. Somehow, my conniving nature would sneak away and get behind the wheel. Why was I so stubborn? Why did I need to run the show and play God? Then, in 2014, I got my first real career as a sales manager at a coffee roaster. This job gave me so much pride. I was so passionate about it. I was really good at it, and I made some decent money. What I didn't realize is life is still going to throw me heartache and challenges and curveballs that normal people wouldn't typically seek comfort, excessive comfort in the bottle. What turned out to be just a little bit of bubbles here and there on my lunch break turned into bottles of vodka and bags of blow in the company van that I used to drive. You see, this is a disease of the mind. It's not just a physical one. It's slow and progressive. And despite the warning signs that I was receiving over 7 years ago, I endured this pain, and all I wanted to do was numb the feelings, suppress the hardships, and run away from life changes. It was at this point that I truly accepted I'm an alcoholic and I don't fucking care. I didn't. I held so much hate in my heart. I really didn't have much of a relationship with my family. I just kept spiraling out of control. At the end of 2015, I confided in my brother, who also lives a life in recovery, and I attempted AA. Sure, I still slugged a boxed wine before going into those meetings because I couldn't go in there sober. And, you know, I started showing up, though. The steps on the walls were gibberish to me, and I truly never sat the whole way down, meaning I wasn't really willing to do something about my alcoholism. I was just at the acceptance phase. A tiny part of me knew, though, that this could possibly be the solution. Then I meet my boyfriend Thomas in early 2016. We gravitated towards each other and bonded over our bad habits. After 8 months of using and abusing together, a light went off in him, and he's been sober ever since. I'm so proud he was able to make that lifestyle change. I, on the other hand, continued to up my daily dosage of vodka, because by now, in 2017, I couldn't even stomach beer. Or wine, for that matter. No, it wasn't good enough. It hurt my stomach. I was owned by alcohol, chemically dependent. What that means is I would wake up in the middle of the night. I had the shakes. I had this chest pain that just wouldn't quit. And I had to chug vodka just to not feel this physical pain, just to get rid of the shakes and so I could sleep again. It took so much alcohol to feel something. The unfortunate thing is that my sales job also suffered as a result. You know, there was times, I'll never forget one meeting where my boss was like, "We care about you, Jessica, but you have demons inside you." I was like, what? And there were so many days that my coworker would be like, you smell like alcohol. But I didn't care. I slowly but rapidly fell into a state of depression, paranoia, anxiety, and the woes. Woe is me. Thomas wasn't always there. We were on again, off again. Rightfully so. Bless his heart. There is only so much that a sober person can do when, as they watch someone they love slowly kill themselves. Around March, April 2017, I slowly started to tell people goodbye. I was pondering slitting my wrist in a bathtub on Friday night and just ending it. I was done. I had all the intentions in the world of ending it that Friday night. But because I voiced this to a couple of people, my sister called the cops on me. They showed up to my house for a wellness check. I was pissed to have cops in my house on three sheets to the wind, and they're trying to talk me through the mindset I was in. Once they left, my family sat me down. Mind you, my family sat me down on several occasions. There were so many times that they would pray that I was just getting to the destination I was going to safely. After totaling my second car, they were just praying that I would change my ways. After showing up to church, reeking of booze, they were like praying over me, like, can you please, like, get this? There was a handful of moments of blackouts prior to, and here I was, spring 2017, hiding my vodka, drinking behind closed doors, empties underneath my bed, in my closet, downing handles of vodka every other day, and a bag of blow to keep me up. The insanity manifested so deep, I truly lost sight of who I really was. It wasn't the job, it wasn't the heartache, it wasn't the relationships that I tarnished. It was me. This whole time, I was broken. I was lost and blocked from the sunlight of the spirit. I made it through that spring, and there was still one other occasion when Tom came over and had the suicide hotline on the phone to talk to me. It was a dark past, y'all. And because he knew how painful it was and how lonely the life is, being trapped amongst your alcohol and addiction, he truly didn't give up on me. In the summer of 2017, I felt my job narrowing in on me. Cutting out my extra week in pay was the last straw. I put my notice in, and I think we all thought that that was the solution. Yeah, Jessica leaves this job and she'll slowly get back together. Well, I couldn't even handle a serving restaurant job. For a few weeks, my old restaurant took me back and I got fired for drinking on the job. So by fall 2017, my sister, who was my roommate, was beyond stress, avoiding me and our apartment as a whole. My brother, meanwhile, stayed in touch with me because he knew how difficult it was to overcome this disease of the mind. So the first weekend of September 2017, I went to a show at Red Rocks, Colorado. My bestie lived in Colorado, and she had some Molly for me to trip on. But when I showed up, she had no idea that I was 18 months into this chemically dependent alcoholic state. She was so confused that I needed Gatorade and vodka on me at all times. The day after the show, we went to brunch, and I didn't get my morning vodka in. Oh, I was so uncomfortable. We tried going to a brewery. Ooh, that beer didn't work. I was so uncomfortable. And we got back to her place, and her roommate offered me a shot of hot vodka. Silly me didn't realize that there is a difference between the temperature of my vodka. The second I took that shot, I like ran to the bathroom and immediately got sick. But there wasn't just food. There was blood that came up. I shared this with my brother, thinking I was safe to confide in another alcoholic, but he met a friend in the rooms named Ruben Garcia, and Ruben met with my family to see if he could be of service. My brother urged my parents to help get me help. As a drug and alcohol counselor, Ruben was able to set up a detox and treatment plan before they all sat me down for a full-on intervention. So on September 17th, 2017, I woke up jobless, texting my sister. She's like, oh, good, she's awake now. So she came into our apartment moments later, knocked on my door, and was like, can you get dressed? The family's here. My heart dropped. I nearly like freaked out. I was like, what the? Oh my God, what's going on? Pulled the bottle of vodka out of my mini fridge. Yeah, because I had a mini fridge in my bedroom and chugged it down. I was like, okay, am I good? Am I good? And I walked out. And I just thought I was going to be some basic family meeting, being like, oh, Jessica, here, we need to do this for you. Then I saw RJ in the room, and I was like, who is that guy? And I was like, oh, my God, they're about to do a real intervention on me. I was seriously shocked that this is where my life had led me. I don't know about you, but I used to watch A&E interventions and like pity the person that's like slowly destructing their life. And then they get sat in the room with a professional and then they throw this tantrum, but then they end up going. I was like, I'm in my real intervention right now. It was so surreal. And honestly, I barely remember what was said to me. I mean, it was in one ear, out the other, but essentially they were like, go to rehab or we bounce out of your life. And I was like, okay, bye. They left, upset. I wasn't having it. And I go into my room and I start folding my laundry, and Ruben comes into the room and he's like trying to reason with me to see if there's something that he could do. And I was like, excuse me, I have fold laundry to fold and I have a job fair to go to. Because, Miss Independent, self-sufficient, on-time bill payer, successful saleswoman was not going to let this morning offset. Her mind was set on this job fair, getting a job, and her life back on track. Mind you, that job fair was a dud. And that night, my boyfriend Thomas let me cry in his arms. I had all the woes in the world. I was like, I can't believe they did that. He was like, Jess, what do you have to lose to go? And I was like, I've already lost my job. I'm pretty sure I'm going to lose my family. And I'm probably going to get kicked out of that apartment. I guess I have to lose you, my life, my health, my car. I have quite a bit to lose. And at this point, I had a mini surrender. What would soon be my future. Because the acceptance was there a long time ago. I was okay with being an alcoholic. But I was not willing to turn my life and will over to the care of God. And I had yet to believe that God could restore me to sanity. So on the following day, I bargain with Ruben and I go, look, I'll do this, but you check me in November 1st. Okay, y'all, it's September 18th. And I'm saying November 1st check-in because I want to enjoy my Halloween, my last Halloween drunk. And I want to be able to pack up my room and make some money so I can have my mom pay my bills for me while I'm in rehab. Who does that? Okay, I don't know about you, but if someone hits the opportunity to go to rehab and they're sat down with a professional in the room, there's no lag time between intervention and check-in. People just drop their lives and go. They're already tired, and they're already sick and tired of being sick and tired. But not me. Sober Miss Independent needed 5 to 6 more weeks of this joyride, and I'm really thankful that RJ worked with me. I can only imagine, I sometimes hear his side of the story, and he was just like, and I know he prayed to God for his guidance, and I'm just really thankful that they did. They worked with me. I mean, my siblings really didn't talk to me during that period, and my mom was, you know, one of my biggest believers. So those last few weeks, I really needed them to solidify. Because I'm sure you can relate, as you near the end of the road, you're questioning, is alcoholism or this life and addiction even worth it? Because that's what that 5 to 6 weeks really solidified for me. That this life in alcoholism was lonely, tiring, physically exhausting, mentally draining. And I was slowly digging my early grave. In fact, that last weekend before November 1st, I ended up in the ER for stomach issues, and I was diagnosed with the onset of pancreatitis. The lady, I just can only imagine what she even looked like, because I was like, don't worry, I'm going to treatment in a few days. And the nurse must have been like, you're nuts. But I was nuts at that time. So November 1st morning came. I had my suitcase packed, everything, you know, packed up in my room, and I had my vodka with strawberries, and my parents came to pick me up. We went and we met with Ruben for breakfast, and I just sat there miserable, unable to eat while they had their breakfast tacos. And the three of them ushered me to Texas Star Detox while I cried in my mom's arms. She always knew I would keep my word, even though others doubted me. And that meant a lot, as I'm sure you can relate. A lot of people in our lives give up on us because they don't understand, and they too felt hopeless in the situation at hand. It was one of the best days of my life, looking back at it. It was the day I fully surrendered my life to God. I slowly began to trust that things could get better and that my life didn't have to be this depressing anymore. So checking into detox, if I recall correctly, I blew a 0.245. I was 40 pounds heavier than I am today, and yet I had a sigh of relief come over me. It still wasn't easy, and after making it through detox, I showed up to Austin Recovery. Man, was I in a shocker, okay? I was like, I have to stay here for 30 days. I literally cried in the bathroom and thought I sentenced myself to, like, prison. Okay, so maybe the appearance is a little rough around the edges, but I remember hearing, why would rehab be a fancy 5-star hotel? They don't want you to like it here, and they certainly don't want you to come back. And that stuck with me. It helped me level out my bratty judgment, and I finally started to embrace the program in front of me. I'm not sure if Ted is still a counselor here, but he was so amazing. He truly got to know me, and he knew I was meant for more. He had belief in me when I had none, and the fog was just slowly dissipating. So naturally, as someone who excelled in her educational endeavors, her professional career, and her alcoholic years, I took sobriety and ran with it. I viewed treatment as a crash course, and I was ready to ace it. The mind is a powerful thing, and what I quickly realized is the need for a psychic change. So in the doctor's opinion in the big book, it states, unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope for his recovery. So in treatment, we discuss the neuroplasticity of the brain, right? We are wired a certain way to think, I'm a black sheep. I never really belonged. No one understands me and no one ever will. But I had to slowly teach myself that I am not alone. That this doesn't have to be my end destination. That I can have another chance at life. That I am a beautiful human being, and that I was put on this world for more than just slowly killing myself through substance abuse. And I hope you all too realize that you are beautiful and that you have a life worth living. Back before I went to rehab in my little 6-week escapade, my dad and my sister sat me down, my sister Rumi. They were like, hey, when you get out of treatment, you're not going to be on this lease and you're not coming back to this apartment. And I was like, where am I going to live? And they're like, you're going to go into sober living? And I was like, what's that? Halfway house, huh? I didn't care. I just allowed the plan to unfold for me. So once I left Austin Recovery refreshed and clear-minded, I moved into an Oxford house. It was a trip. It wasn't always unicorns and rainbows, but if you really want to make recovery work, you sacrifice and you make the most of the experiences. The accountability was exactly what I needed. It was beyond a humbling experience. And I'm still in touch with the ladies I lived with and my Oxford buddies to this day. So if you by chance have sober living in your future, I highly recommend that you find the benefits in it and that you embrace it as a stepping stone to your future and what the journey can take you. Because after 7 months in the Oxford, I moved into a graduated sober house, and that one had a little bit more freedom. Each house supported me, but boy, did it test me. Thankfully, I found my sponsor in detox, and I signed up for a recovery coach through Communities for Recovery. So both Kathy and Gloria are still very much a part of my journey, and they helped me through so many tough times that I experienced in the sober living and beyond. Because this is how I see it. If we are all given these resources and these tools that are available to us for little to no cost at all, why wouldn't we utilize them? I never want to know what relapse feels like, so I clinged on to those that knew this program and were working it successfully, and they've helped me get through some tough times in sobriety when I just wanted to throw it all away. So I'll never forget waiting for Austin Recovery to pick me up from Texas Star Detox. The fog was gone. I was 7 days sober. I was feeling good. I was ready to keep going. But my ride was late. I was getting anxious. And honestly, I should have been gone by the time Kathy came to share her story at Texas Star. So I was kind of irritated. I was like sitting in the back, crossed arms. And it was like love at first speech. Her animate story and passionate message made my head turn, and I sat the whole way down. I was like, this lady has her shit together, and she's going to be my sponsor. One thing that she shared, this visualization at the end of her story, and I really love it. She will definitely tell it better than me, but she was like, picture gazelles in a herd. Picture them all together and picture this cheetah on the outside, slowly, steadily, patiently waiting for a gazelle to slowly lose its place. So if you're not in the middle of the gazelles and one of them slowly gets left behind, that's the one that the cougar is going to pounce on. So be that gazelle in the middle of the herd because you don't want to go out that way. Straight out of treatment, I also heard about 90 meetings in 90 days. I didn't get it. Honestly, thought it was a little excessive, but I wanted to ace recovery. I was like, I'm up for the challenge. For real, it took some strategy, consistently finding meetings that fit my schedule, but honestly, I appreciated the exploration that it allowed me to do, and I really immersed myself in the recovery community in the rooms. And now there's online meetings with the global pandemic, so there's even more meetings available at your fingertips. I just had no idea that meetings were laying down this strong foundation for my recovery that I still lead with today. So Kathy was amazing support as I set out to work the 12 steps. I was insistent on getting them all down before my 1 year mark, and I hit the ground running. I found the 4-step inventory that worked for me, and I slowly worked my amends. I felt the fear, and I did it anyways. Despite all this daily program and action and all that it entails, I persisted through. Don't be discouraged, because one thing I don't think was explicitly told to me is how freeing the 12 steps are. It taught me what was really bugging me all these years. It opened my eyes to see my part, my resentments, my defects, my fears. I gained a whole nother level of awareness, and I let go of what no longer served me. So although Kathy could be super supportive, and she allowed me to work the steps in my own time, my peer coach Gloria was consistently there for me each week. I highly encourage you all to seek out mentorship, because how can we evolve and grow without guidance? These ladies helped me see that this program is a lifelong endeavor, and that no matter how strong my recovery is, there is always a chance that if I let up on my program and I don't do the basics of this program and what it's taught me, that I could fall victim to the bottle. That if I don't attend meetings regularly, if I don't talk to my sponsor, another alcoholic, if I don't pray and meditate, if I don't do my nightlies or spot check inventory, that I could lose it all in a moment's notice. Because addiction is patient, and it waits for our vulnerability to get the worst of us. I've also met some kick-ass individuals in the rooms. The inspiration fills my cup, and the community reminds me every day that I'm not alone, that I'm a part of, and that I don't need to hide who I truly am, and I don't need to be ashamed of how far deep I fell. The messages are so uplifting, and each day I have a chance to truly live. Looking back at it, When I chose sobriety, a part of me died. A selfish, stubborn, self-centered, ego-driven individual slowly stepped aside and allowed my higher power that I choose to call God take the wheel. I, just like you, are truly a gift, and I didn't want to neglect the beautiful soul within me any longer. So my life looks a lot different these days, and it all began with the decision to let go and let God in. I surrendered my will over to the care of God, and I trusted the process. I slowly developed a new way of living, and I did it with a strong connection with God. Whatever you want to call it, though, by the way, creator, God, universe, spirit, angel, higher power, whatever. Let it lead you to, because the road of addiction and alcoholism is mentally and physically lonely. I realized that my happiness in sobriety is contingent and dependent on my spiritual fitness, that spiritual condition, and how strong it is. So the relationship I have with God today is honestly miraculous. I truly believe that He led me through my sober living experience, my 12 steps, and all the serious hardships in between. Today, I stand before you in the best shape of my life. I surrendered my career and I was willing to start from the bottom. And now I'm in one of the healthiest work environments I've ever been in. They actually care about my well-being. And I've started another side hustle business that's surrounded by my health and wellness. Not only that, I show up for my loved ones and I inspire everyone that I meet with a gravitating smile and glow. I also am able to enjoy activities I never thought of, like going to live concerts and enjoying a happy hour with my normal drinking buddy friends. And I'm not the only one that has experienced this blessing. You are capable of this life too. I am a present, loving, supportive daughter, sister, girlfriend, friend, and employee. I genuinely listen and I try to lead with a servant heart versus a selfish one. But God knows I'm not perfect, and that's okay. It's progress, not perfection, right? And that's the beauty of this program. Not everyone gets a chance to experience the success. In fact, I was told once that 1 out of 3 survive this mental disease. And I was like, I'm going to be that one. And I want you to be that one too. There's a handful of scenarios that made me almost throw it all away. Almost rested on my laurels and just gave up and had the case of the buckets. But I leaned into this program and the recovery community. I attended a meeting. I reached out to my sponsor, my peer coach, another alcoholic, my family member. I prayed to God for wisdom. I felt through the pain and feelings, and even when I wanted to numb them. I put pen to paper and I figured out what was blocking me. If by chance you have fallen before, know that we all fail on the way to success. The most inspiring leaders and pivotal individuals have failed. They, you know, we all come from all walks of life, so it doesn't matter your background either. Just don't give up on yourself. Don't lose hope and know you are worthy. And this way of life is way better than any drunk or high that we've experienced. Be patient with yourself because we all have different paces and journeys too. So, most days, I get up, I thank God for the restful sleep I just had, I work out, I eat nutritious food, I pray, I meditate, I visualize on what I want more of, I say my affirmations, I journal a little bit, I send out some gratitudes, and I get to work. I connect with others, I share my world, and I lead a life in health and fitness. I show up wholeheartedly for my employer. I'm slowly narrowing in on the last of my debt, and I live a peaceful life full of meaningful relationships with my parents, siblings, and boyfriend. I never knew that I'd be the person that people could trust, that they would look to for advice. I never thought that I could provide a positive influence in other people's lives. I never fathomed the life I lead today. And I feel blessed for this one day because that's all we have, right? 24 hours to make the most of it, our daily reprieve. I share all of this with you in hopes that you get something of value in my journey. I wish you the same success, the willingness to accept who you are, the serenity to accept what you cannot change, your past, your mistakes. I wish you the courage to change the things you can so you could live your life to the fullest. And I wish you the wisdom to know the difference, because it's never too late to start anew and truly make a mark in this world and build a legacy that you are proud of. If we are painstaking about this development, this phase of our development, we'll be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see our experience and how it could benefit others. That fear, that feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook on life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to change situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, but they will always materialize if we work for them. So whether you still feel lost, you are now found. It may take some time to believe and get to the point that I'm at today, but I believe in you. I challenge you to find your best life and evolve into the best version of yourself. You are not created to live a comfortable life. In fact, get comfortable with being uncomfortable. You were born to inspire and live a radical journey. Don't shrink back from the call God has for you. Step into it. I believe you were meant for more, and I thank you for sharing this moment with me tonight.
Thank you, Jessica. That was awesome.
Yeah, thanks, Jessica.
Thanks.
Thank you, Jessica.
Yeah, Gil, thanks for making it.
Yeah. Thank you, Jessica.